listening to The Andrew Lawton Show on 980 CFPL.
Welcome back to The Andrew Lawton Show. It is just after 1:07 this afternoon on Monday, March 19th. And we are doing a very special segment for the next hour. And we've done a few of these so far on different topics where we take two people that are connected to an issue or an idea and we debate that at great length, getting into the nitty-gritty of these things that we don't often get the chance to in a typical radio segment. We've covered firearms, prostitution, lots of good stuff there. Today we're going after one that actually impacts a lot of people in the region surrounding us and people that are listening to this show, and that is supply management, which in the context of dairy and poultry specifically has become a fair bit of a contentious issue in the last federal conservative leadership race, where you had one candidate wanting to dismantle supply management and I think 94 candidates who said no to dismantling supply management. But I know every time we raised the topic on the show, it got a lot of great response. So we're going to debate that. The question, should Canada dismantle supply management? Arguing yes is David Clement of the Consumer Choice Center, and arguing no is Bruce Sargent, who is the head of Farm Boy Productions and part of a dairy farming family himself. Both of them join me in studio. It's good to talk to you both. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, so we're going to start with David on this one, as the gentleman arguing, yes, we should abolish it. Why is it that you think supply management needs to go in Canada? Why is the status quo not working?
So I think there are three main reasons why we need to dismantle supply management. The first is that it's a selective benefit. So it's a form of government protection exclusively for dairy and poultry farmers. It's not a luxury that's afforded to other farmers, whether you be beef, fish, pork, etc. So in that nature, it's unfair. And what happens from that is we see inflated prices, so much so that it actually increases the average yearly grocery bill for Canadian families anywhere between $300 to $500 a year. And for poor Canadians, that's about 2.5% of their yearly income. That pushes 190,000 Canadians from above the poverty line to below the poverty line. And just based on that alone, I think that's a good enough reason to dismantle it, which leads me to the third, which is it's very problematic for our trade negotiations. It's a protection that other countries do not have in the same way, or to the same extent. It makes negotiating NAFTA particularly difficult. It was a real wrench in CETA, which I'm sure we'll get to. And so those are my main three reasons for wanting to dismantle it.
All right. Well, you touched on one thing that we will get to very shortly, and that is the impact on consumers. But I'll go to you, Bruce, more generally here first. Why do you think we shouldn't? Why do you think the status quo is working out fine?
So I have an issue with the status quo word, because supply management has evolved a lot in the last 50 years. So 50 years ago, it was actually a beef farmer from Western Canada that looked around the world and saw complete chaos and instability, and that's a quote, in dairy markets in virtually every country comparable to Canada. And so that instability was backed up by artificial subsidies, because there was such huge fluctuation in prices in these commodities that we're here to talk about. So fast forward 50 years, it's 2018. When you look at the world market for dairy, it is absolutely chaotic. And there's still these multi-billion dollar subsidies that governments are using in markets that don't have supply management. And so 50 years ago, my grandfather went to the processor and got a different price every day. Now we know what our price is going to be, and it's stable, and it goes up and down as costs do. And that's the benefit of supply management. It's comparable to American prices, and we've always got to remember that costs are different across the border, but it's a system that works, and it's a system that I definitely am proud to defend.
We are going to go over a number of the areas connected to this, and I've told the candidates, or not the candidates, I'm used to doing political debates now. I've told the participants they're free to interject and correct each other, and I'll step in as moderator to make sure that no one is running the clock. But I want to go right out of the gate here to impact on consumers. Mm-hmm. You mentioned it in your opening statement, David, and the Dairy Farmers of Canada, which is pro-supply management, has said that there isn't a market impact on consumers at all. They say on the website here, the Canadian consumers, on average, spend 10% of their income on food and alcohol, one of the lowest in the world. And in fact, when you look at the dairy prices in particular, it's a negligible impact. So why are you saying there is an impact? And what is that quantifiably?
So to quantify that, the 20-year average price premium between what we pay and what consumers in the United States pay, for milk it's 47%, for eggs it's 28%. In 2016, it was 57% for milk and 36% for eggs, so we see a bit of an upward trend. It's getting worse. And that's using PPP dollars, so that's adjusting for differences in currency. It's making a level playing field for the Canadian and U.S. dollar. And so when the dairy farmers of Canada produce these numbers, they're often citing studies in which they've openly funded, most of which are self-selected, not peer-reviewed. And when we look at the peer-reviewed evidence, the economic analysis of supply management is that it does have a substantial impact on price, mostly because the compensation equation determined for what farmers get. First off, no other farmers get that. And secondly, the items that are included in that are what inflate the prices beyond what we see in the U.S., especially beyond what we see in other countries with no supply management or no farm subsidies like New Zealand or Australia.
I'll go to you on this, Bruce. New Zealand. Interesting you bring that up, because New Zealand is one of the stronger dairy markets out there, and they have one processor that requires that dairy farmers buy shares in their company, production shares, so that they can make milk. So they have their own single corporation that's controlling the milk supply. But I think it's important when we talk about studies. I know one that David talks about a fair bit is Milked and Feathered, which I preferred to call Tarred and Feathered, because it is definitely a bit of a hit piece. And so the numbers that come out of it is what David's referring to in the $300 per family that is apparently more in Canada. And the issue with that study is that it takes numbers from 2010 only.
That's
it
not
uses,
true.
It uses...
We'll get there.
Yep. May it uses sorry, it uses Winnipeg and Windsor as the basis for Canadian prices. So it's saying in this paper that it's $5 for 4 liters of milk, which isn't true. It also says that it doesn't try to calculate the subsidy difference in American and Canadian dairy because it says it's too complicated. And I have a study that was released in February that says that yes, dairy farmers in the U.S. are paid less, but when you factor in the subsidies they receive, it's actually pretty close to what we receive.
Hang on, though. Yeah. I just want to go back to the original question here, Bruce.
Yeah.
So as far as consumer impact is concerned, do you think there is a cost to consumers that can be linked to supply management? And is that substantive enough, in your view, to basically warrant any change?
In the U.S., they spend income on disposable income on food. In Canada, it's 11. So there's that 2% difference on all foods. I know that when we're talking about supply management, these numbers are very carefully picked in border prices that show unfavorably on us, but that's not accurate to the national averages.
Yeah, that just isn't true. If we looked at Milked and Feathered, so first off, it's peer-reviewed research. Secondly, it's won a Canadian Public Policy Award for being the best interdisciplinary research on any subject. So it's definitely the cream of the crop. When we look at the cities in which they actually use the cheapest markets in Canada, which is Montreal, Vancouver, Winnipeg, and Windsor. And they use those and they compare them against the median average in the average in the United States.
Yeah, but is Windsor not a problematic city to include in any study? Because I know even in London, we're an hour from the border and we very frequently go across to do our shopping. Windsor even more so.
Yeah, but that actually helps my argument, because that puts downward pressure on prices in these border cities so that they have
artificial downward pressure.
I mean, it's not artificial.
A loss leader in the U.S. is transferred to the farmer because there's no supply management. They can pay the farmer whatever the supposed world market price is. In Canada, they need to cover the negotiated price between the processors, the farmers, and the government that happens every single year and is very transparent.
But are they not both artificial then? It's just a matter of which artificial construct you prefer.
And one is forced by government and one isn't.
One harms farmers and one doesn't.
You could argue that one benefits 12,000 farmers at the expense of 36 million consumers. I mean, if you look at it in terms of what's fair and what's equitable.
That 12,000 number also isn't fair. There's 12,000 farms, dairy farms, only dairy farms. That's not counting the poultry farms that are under this same supply management system.
Sure.
There can be multiple families. So that number is actually hundreds of thousands of people that you're impacting.
We've got to take a quick break here. We're talking about supply management. The question of the debate is, should Canada dismantle supply management? Joined in studio by Consumer Choice Center North American Affairs Manager David Clement and Bruce Sargent of Farm Boy Productions and a dairy farmer himself. We'll talk more on this when we come back on The Andrew Lawton Show. Stay tuned.
Andrew Lawton Show on 980 CFPL.
We are back. It is the supply management debate here on The Andrew Lawton Show featuring David Clement and Bruce Sargent. We kind of ended off the last segment on an area that I wanted to bring up here, and I'll start with you on this, Bruce. When we talk about the number of farmers that are impacted here, and you mentioned that one number that was offered in the debate by your opponent in this, you need to contextualize as being the number of farms, not individual farmers. Mm-hmm. But I've heard that supply management is oftentimes not about just the individual family farm, but also very much helping these giant corporations that don't have to worry about their bottom lines at all. And I wanted to ask you here, for people listening, and what is, in your view, the impact of supply management that makes it essential for those in the farm on both sides of the spectrum?
Yeah, so if anything, the corporations may not be the biggest fan of supply management because they have a unified voice of farmers that can ask for a price that they deserve. So it doesn't benefit the corporations. It really is to the benefit of farmers. A number that's also important is that just the Canadian dairy industry alone contributes $20 billion annually to the GDP. And there's 200,000 processing jobs connected to just dairy. In Ontario, dairy and dairy processing is bigger than auto in terms of employment. So when we talk about these very huge shifts in dynamics, we have to think about what else it could do to our economy, not just the farmers, the processors as well, and all those jobs that rely on it.
So, I mean, the good thing is we know, at least as best we can, from studies that look at policy alternatives, that when or if Canada were to become an exporter of all of these products, that we would see growth, net growth, in all of those sectors. So it's not a doomsday scenario where we all of a sudden lose the dairy sector. All of a sudden we have basically mass kind of fleeing from the industry. When we talk about protection for farmers, it's also important to highlight. So in the context of, we know the impact it has on consumers. It unfairly gouges the poor, in my opinion. It's essentially a tax on the consumer items that people need the most, that families eat the most. And when we look at the data on who the actual benefactors are, so the average income for a Canadian family is $68,000. The average family the average income for a poultry farming family is nearly double that at $120,000. So here we have a system. When Bruce talks about protecting farmers, well, yeah, it's protecting farmers and handing them a rather lavish lifestyle in terms of income at the expense of middle-income, low-income Canadians who are footing that bill through these artificial prices.
So I have to jump in there.
Yes.
Because, like, I'm sorry, David, but you have no clue how much work goes into farming. Like, none whatsoever. My parents work 365 days a year, and frankly, you have no right to determine what is fair for them to get paid. I'm not here asking you what your salary is and the impact on consumers. And one more thing.
That's what
David,
supply management is.
No.
Hey, hang on. We'll get back to you in a second, David.
You have no right. I have no right asking what Andrew's salary is because I don't know how much he works. And I know that American farmers aren't being paid fairly. On the topic of exports, Martha Hall Finley tried to say that, you know, we should open up our market during NAFTA to exports. In terms of consumption, only 5% of what is produced in the world goes on the world market for trade. There is no room for more dairy to go on the world market for trade. If we open ourselves up to that, it would be a completely unnecessary risk, and it would be damaging to our industries. That's pretty well, that's accepted for widely.
Okay, so two points. First off, if the government is going to protect your industry and your income is derived from that protection, it's the same thing with the Sunshine List or any other instance in which the government is creating the circumstances for wages and salary, then yeah, I think it's fair game. I think it's fair game when we're talking about the context of low-income families subsidizing or having a wealth transfer from low-income to high-income people, in the same way that we criticize corporate welfare and bailouts and hydro CEO salaries and all sorts of things like that. It's similar in that nature. In terms of the export market, I mean, the numbers say differently. If you look at the projections for New Zealand and Australia right now, they're expected to grow at 18% and 13% between now and 2025. And when you say that only 5% of the global market is engaged in export, that's because we have these restrictions. We have subsidies that prohibit through the WTO. So you're going full circle in the argument, and it doesn't hold a glass of water, because as soon as you get rid of those, like we see with Canadian beef, you have those goods go both ways.
We're having two different conversations at the same time right now. We're going to talk about imports and exports in the next half hour, I guarantee you. But I will go back to you, Bruce, on the salary question, because I do think there is a valid point here that if you have someone who is, they don't have a government intervention or government program at all that's leading to that product, I'd agree with you. Do you think there is a vested public interest in there being a little bit of a better understanding about the financials? Because let's face it, a lot of those salaries that farmers in supply managed sectors do have are as a result of supply management, are they not?
Let me ask you this. How much do you pay per liter of milk, roughly?
I'd say probably $3 a liter.
And how much do you think the farmer receives from that?
I've seen the numbers, but tell them.
it's about 70 cents. So you're paying, I paid about $4 for 4 liters of milk in Guelph last week, and the farmer...
I've got to find your store instead. Yeah, I'm getting ripped off.
The farmer receives about 70 cents of that. So it's so complicated to try to explain, but the farmer receives 70 cents. StatsCan says that for every dollar of revenue on the farm, there's 70 cents of expense. So we can't get into the cost of feed, the cost of hydro, the cost of living. There's so many things that go into the operation of a dairy farm that sometimes 70 cents doesn't cover the bills. And to say that this is like we deserve to be on the Sunshine List because we're
I didn't say that.
You inferred it. But there's a big difference between having a negotiated price that each farm gets fairly and having a fixed income. That's not what we're getting. We're getting a negotiated price that you still have to be efficient and work hard to receive. And it's just so much more complicated than...
I will ask you, David, to Bruce's point here. When you are looking at a pretty small margin that the dairy farmers are saying they get on this. Mm-hmm. Is there not a problem of not a sustainable industry at all once you abolish the only thing that gives them that protection?
I mean, if we look at other agricultural sectors, the answer would be no. We look at Canadian beef. So Canadian beef flows American and Canadian beef flow both ways over the border. Mm-hmm. The ability for us to trade both ways over the border hasn't caused this mass exodus of beef farmers. In fact, Canadian beef farmers are some of the best in the world in terms of what we export. And so they operate under similar circumstances, under similar operational provisions, like Bruce mentioned, and they've seemed to make it work. And they're prosperous because they've capitalized on those export opportunities. And so the long answer there is what I just said. The short answer is no. I don't think that that argument is particularly persuasive.
All right, we've got to take a quick break here. You're listening to the Andrew Lawton Show, debate on supply management, featuring David Clement of the Consumer Choice Center and Bruce Sargent of Farm Boy Productions. We'll be back on the show, 980 CFPL. Stay tuned.
is the Andrew Lawton Show on Global News Radio 980 CFPL.
I just said to my guest a couple of moments ago, we probably should have blocked off 2 hours for this debate. A lot to get through as we tackle supply management, specifically dairy, but we're also looking at poultry as well and the broader themes here with David Clement from the Consumer Choice Center and Bruce Sargent, who is a dairy farmer and the head of Farm Boy Productions. And the debate is really about whether we should dismantle supply management in Canada. David is arguing, yes, we should, while Bruce is arguing to the contrary. And we did finish off the first half hour tackling the import-export component of this, and I wanted to actually pick up there because one argument that I've seen put forward by opponents of supply management is that if you were to get rid of supply management, all of a sudden your options, if you go to the store, your supply of what you can actually access as a consumer increases, not to mention the price going down. What would the impact be on the import and the export side if we were to get rid of it? We'll start with David on this one.
So, I mean, the big thing in terms of access is we would have more competition. Right now, we don't have competition in those sectors, which is why prices are artificially high for turkey, dairy, chicken, eggs. So what we would see is we'd see a lot more competition. Obviously, that's going to drive prices down as grocers are able to purchase those products at a cheaper rate from the people who produce them. We'll have more choice on our shelves in terms of where our products are from, a variety of different cheeses. I mean, if anyone's ever tried to purchase cheese from another country here in Canada, what they pay is 300% more than what it otherwise would be on the shelf without the supply-managed mandated tariff. And so all of a sudden, the world, in terms of the world's kind of grocery store, becomes open to Canadians. And that's a great thing. We embrace that with so many other products in our life. In terms of what we wear, what we drive, it's just simply applying the benefits of a globalized world or globalization to various other aspects of food.
I'll get your response, Bruce, but before, I just want to ask, are we in agreement about the 300% number?
Or yes. Is this
okay, perfect.
Yes. There's a reason for
sure
that,
this
yes.
One of the other disputed yes. Territories
no, no,
here.
No, no, the 300% stems from a transition from import quotas to tariffs, and that was on the bequest of the U.S. government. And the 300% was arrived at in part to balance the subsidies that U.S. farmers do receive. So they also have a 100% tariff for Canadian products going into the U.S. And important to note here is that the U.S. actually allows less dairy in from Canada than we take from them. They have a 5-to-1 trade ratio benefiting them in that they send more dairy here already. So there is American dairy there, and we do have trade deals where specialty cheeses and other products can come in, and we agree with that. The notion that prices are going to go down is just not, it doesn't bear out in reality. And even Sylvain Charlebois, a staunch anti-supply management professor from Dalhousie, has admitted that there likely won't be much of a store change. And the point that I bring to that is that last May, the dairy farmer's price went down 5 cents a liter. Did you see that in the grocery store? No. So when prices do go down, and they do in the dairy industry and the egg industry and the turkey industry, when prices go down, the processor or the retailer is going to absorb that margin. And that's what we see in the U.S. The prices aren't significantly different between the U.S. and Canada for the most part, but the price that the farm gets, the farm gate price, is very, very, very different. And so what that means is that in the U.S., the retailer and the processor are taking the bulk of the margin, and they're relying on the government to step in later with a subsidy.
So if I'm wrong, and what Canadians pay is not exponentially more for these products than what Americans pay, then you would get rid of the tariff. The tariff is to hold competition at bay.
Hold cheap competition out, that is artificially low.
No, you just said that it was comparable price.
The farm gate price is what we're talking about.
Sure.
The farmers are paid less in the U.S., and the grocery store prices aren't that much different.
No,
It's cheap because they're paying the farm less. They can sell it here for less than what they do down there.
But the retail price is 47% different on a 20-year average.
No, it's
and
not.
It's, and it's higher than that on a 2016 or 2017 figure. And so this is the problem with the argument that we need to have tariffs, but Canadian milk is not overpriced, because the tariffs are used to keep out foreign competition. And so it's got to be one or the other.
the farm gate price is so low in the USA because they're overproducing milk, because they don't have a uniform way of matching production demand with supply, which we do. In the US, they waste 1.5 million liters of milk per day. So that excess milk is exactly what they would dump here if we got rid of our tariffs.
So
that waste, that excess, that's harming them because they're making too much. And it's because, so people always say, why are they making too much? So when the price goes down, the farmers' costs stay the same in the US. So they make more milk to earn the same amount of money with more milk rather than cutting back. So that's 160 million liters wasted in the US every single year.
And Ontario farmers over the course of the last 5 years have done exactly the same thing, where they've overproduced and they've had to dump that milk too.
Not 500,000 liters a day. We make 8 million liters a day in Ontario. They waste 500,000 liters every day. What David's referring to is a couple of years ago, we had to dump some byproduct skim milk. And it's not skim milk that you would buy in the grocery store that has its cream taken out of it. There was too much. There wasn't enough drying capacity, and so there was 800,000 liters dumped in a single year. The U.S. is wasting 500,000 liters of milk every year. So that's energy, that's feed, that's animals being raised, that's labor, that's all that costs being completely wasted.
With the giant asterisk that the U.S. market, like it is as a country, is 10 times bigger than us. And so when you index for the fact that we're a smaller country, your argument doesn't hold anymore.
I'll give you a final response on this, Bruce, and then we'll move on.
I'm going to go back to something that I didn't get to before, and that dairy is very different from beef, and we can't compare the two, because my milk gets picked up every other day. Beef does not go to market every other day. Eggs get picked up multiple times per week. If we go on to an open market and get rid of supply management, the price that my family will receive will fluctuate on a day-to-day basis while costs stay the same. When was the last time you got gas and felt that you were paying fairly for that gas? I got gas in Guelph at $1.26 this morning, and when I got here, it was $1.16. So, you know, that's different when you're not relying on it for your income. But without supply management helping these sectors, we're opening them up to a lot of pain, essentially.
Just a short quip in return for that. So when you say that there's a substantial difference in terms of product category for milk and beef, you're right. But when you compare chicken and turkey with beef, you're not. In terms of shelf life, the amount, the past due date in which it can still be consumed, the ways in which we can export it, there is very little difference. And so even if you've made a good argument for milk, you haven't made it for chicken, for chicken, poultry, or turkey, or eggs. And so that's another huge umbrella problem with the fact that inside of supply management, it's most often the milk farmers who are the dairy farmers who are the loudest voice, but they make those arguments as if they apply for these other products, and they don't.
Is that a valid comparison in your view, the chicken to beef comparison, Bruce?
These chicken and turkey were fluctuating uncontrollably 50 years ago, and
that's
And it wasn't – beef farmers had the option 50 years ago to go supply management, and they decide not to. There's still complexities in the poultry industry that do not impact the beef industry. And like, beef cattle can raise their own livestock in the poultry industry, and this is the same in the U.S. and in Canada. People – like, farmers don't actually hatch their own birds. They have to be ordered months in advance from hatcheries that are specialized in doing it. And those prices still fluctuate throughout the year, and production still fluctuates, and they're still very volatile markets.
We've got to take a break here. The supply management debate on the Andrew Lawton Show continues momentarily. Stay tuned.
Listening to the Andrew Lawton Show on 980 CFPL.
Bruce Sargent, a dairy farmer and film producer, joins me in studio defending supply management. David Clement from the Consumer Choice Center arguing against supply management. We've talked a little bit already in the debate thus far about the value of actual milk, and I wanted to move to another dimension of this here for a bit if we can, and that is quota. And I know that there have been situations where the government has, in response to a need, increased allocation for farmers, which dramatically increases basically these farmers' net worth. And that money is ultimately able to be go to them in the future, as I understand it here. And I wanted to ask you, how does anyone benefit but farmers because of their bottom line increases from someone basically having the ability to, with a brush stroke, increase your earning potential and increase your worth?
So there's a lot there. At the beginning of supply management, it was issued for the most part. Those people have moved on, and it's been purchased by the next generation. The increases that you're talking about don't actually have a dollar value. So we do get temporary increases and incentive days for brief periods of time when there are increases, and then eventually that goes on the market for someone to buy. So we have actually been getting increases because there's more processing plants coming online next year. And so once those balance out, that doesn't show up on our balance sheet. The quota that we buy does.
Well, we're given.
We were not given our quota. We bought it.
Well, yeah, maybe you personally, but there are plenty of farmers who received quota for free. And when we take what that quota equals now in modern dollars, it's $28,000 per cow. The average Canadian dairy farm has $2.8 million worth of quota. And so for people who are listening and they maybe don't understand what quota represents, quota represents what a taxi medallion or a taxi license in a major Canadian city does for the ability to drive a taxi. It's the license to produce. Now, it has a stipulation in terms of a certain amount, but it's paying for the license to produce. And so by getting rid of that quota, you could, in theory, have like the Uberization of food in terms of accessibility and properly meeting consumer demand and consumer access, which is what we do at the Consumer Choice Center. And so it's important to understand that quota is this government created asset that for almost any average dairy farm means they're sitting on almost $3 million, which is a substantial sum of money.
So that's not $3 million sitting in the bank account that we can just pull on. Like that's something, it's an asset like a tractor that we have had to purchase, and we gratefully purchase it because we know that it's going to mean that we have a stable market. In the U.S., the herd size to start a farm is in the like 2,000 cow range without supply management, because you cannot get support from the bank for anything lower than that. If you want to start a farm in Ontario, which you can, there's a new entrant program that accepts new dairy farmers every year, you're far more likely to get the support from the bank, and you're also going to only have to be farming at the average of around 50 to 70 cows. So it's a startup cost, but when you think about building a farm for 2,000 cows over building a barn that fits 50 cows, I would argue that there's probably a benefit to the smaller farm with the quota and the stability.
Yeah, but of course the bank is going to be more likely to give a loan to a Canadian dairy farmer because they don't have competition. It's a guaranteed, once you purchase your quota, it's a mandate from government that guarantees that level of income. So the bank looks at it and says, oh, okay, well, I know that they can pay this back because the government has created the scenario where it would be impossible for them to not pay it back. And so in the U.S., when a dairy farmer wants to enter the dairy market, they have to go and get a loan from the bank for the capital to create that farm. When a dairy farmer in Canada wants to start a farm, they have to get a loan for the quota, unless you're paying for quota in cash, which nobody's doing, and you have to get a loan for your capital. And so in terms of ease of access, we can make the comparison between herd size, sure, but in terms of actual access and somebody wanting to get into that market, there's one significantly less burdensome step south of the border.
And south of the border, you get pushed out of the market and forced into bankruptcy by processors that refuse to pay you fairly because you don't have a uniform voice to negotiate a fair price.
Would you say, though, Bruce, I just want to clarify your position for my own understanding here, that keeping people out of the market is not a bug but a feature of supply management?
there needs to be barriers to entry. There's barriers to entry to pig farming and crop farming. There are large investments. But with dairy farming, one of those investments is quota, and it doesn't guarantee you an income, as David is suggesting. It means that we get a fair price, and if you don't operate effectively, and if you are not a good business, you're going to go out of business. But you're going to go out by your own volition, not by being forced out in bankruptcy.
All right, we've got to go to closing statements here. You can finish your final rebuttals to this part of the discussion in it. Yeah. Each of our participants is going to have 90 seconds on this, and because David got to weigh in first, we'll give the closing word on this to Bruce in a moment. But David, you get to give your opening statement first.
So just really quick on...
Closing statement, rather.
Yeah,
sorry,
so really quick on the compensation. In the compensation, what's mandated by the government, profit is included in that. So, yeah, it is pretty much a guarantee by government mandate that a certain level of profitability is there, and that's why farm incomes are so high. So going back to my opening statement on why we should get rid of supply management, first off, we don't do this for other farmers. It's inherently unfair that a powerful political lobby has lobbied for selective benefits, that other farmers don't get. Secondly, we look at the numbers, we look at all of the peer-reviewed research, we look at everything that, whether you're comparing pictures of eggs from north and south of the border or turkey from north and south of the border, you see it every day in terms of the price impact this has on Canadian consumers. It's driving 190,000 people, 190,000 low-income Canadians from above the poverty line to below the poverty line. By getting rid of supply management, not only do you have a more equitable and fair agricultural sector nationally, you have a system that significantly benefits consumers in terms of market access and consumer choice, which are huge poverty alleviation tools. And then we didn't get to really talk about this too much, but the last reason or the last justification for getting rid of it is NAFTA. We know that NAFTA is on the edge of we're losing it, and getting rid of supply management would make it much easier.
All right. We'll give the last word on this to Bruce Sargent.
For the people listening to this who maybe live in the city of London or don't get out into the country a lot, I know it's really hard to understand that this is very important to rural Ontario. It takes no more than a drive to the U.S. rural agriculture than to the Canadian rural agriculture to see that supply management is important to our farmers, and it means that our farmers are going to be paid fairly. Yes, there are other farms that don't have supply management, but overwhelmingly they don't take issue with it. And I know that's true because a lot of them support me. In terms of low-income families, we know that there are people that are struggling to pay their bills, and I would not support a system that harms those people. Because of the stability and the strength of our industry and working together, we donate almost 1 million liters per year as Dairy Farmers of Ontario to food banks for people that struggle paying everything, not just their dairy bill. And in terms of NAFTA, Trump's negotiation style is more like a hostage negotiation. He's protecting his farmers. We need to protect ours. They have a 5-to-1 ratio benefiting them. Yes, he was going to ask for it. No, we don't have to give it to him. CTPPP and CETA and many other trade deals have all happened while maintaining supply management, because there's no such thing as a free market in food. And that's every government supports their agricultural sector, and we need to as well.
All right. Thanks very much, Bruce Sargent from Farm Boy Productions and David Clement from the Consumer Choice Center for coming in. Great chat, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be back with a look at what's coming up in hour two of the Andrew Lawton Show on 980 CFPL. Stay with me.